And we're now going to go on to 09-1175, the United States versus David Elst. Come on up. Come on up.
May it please the court, my name is John Birdsall. I represent the defendant, David Elst. This is a case where the facts are relatively simple. On January 16, 2008, an investigator with Brown County Drug Task Force by the name of Steve Scully, walks into and files a petition for an anticipatory search warrant. On that date, and it was signed by the Brown County judge on that date, and at that time, it was settled law in Wisconsin that an anticipatory search warrant needed to demonstrate that there was a triggering event and that the contraband or the transaction was on a, quote, sure course to, and there had to be this nexus to the residence that they were seeking to search. And I cited that in my reply brief, State v. Meyer. There was four cases, both Court of Appeals and Wisconsin Supreme Court cases, laying down that very well-settled law dating back to 1994. And that becomes important later on when we look at the district court's ruling on this matter. We present this court with two arguments. The first one is that in the search warrant that Investigator Scully filed, he presents exactly no facts to support the assertion that this triggering event would occur. He simply states, quote, if Madsen or another person, and Madsen is the, I should back up, Madsen is the individual that their CI was working with, who then goes over to Mr. Elst's house to get cocaine. On one occasion that he cites in his affidavit prior to the filing of this search warrant, on one occasion, there was a situation where Madsen goes over to Elst's house, gets cocaine, delivers it to the CI. There's no communication between, and that occurred on January 10th. Between January 10th and the 16th, when the petition was filed with the circuit court, no communication between the CI and Madsen. No indication there was going to be any plan, design for a plan, and nothing in progress. So they had nothing to present to the court, and indeed they presented nothing. He simply states, quote, if Madsen or another person delivers a controlled substance or a substance represented to be a controlled substance to the CI and the delivery occurs at 1566 North Road, Elst House, or the person making the delivery comes from or returns to 1566 North Road, then your affiant requests this warrant to be active for a search of the premises. Excuse me. Both the magistrate judge and the district court both found that the district court found, quote, the mere fact that a delivery occurred at the location on January 10th does not constitute probable cause to believe a second delivery would occur there a week later. The magistrate judge also agreed with that. They both found, however, that United States versus Leon applied. That is to say, they felt that because the magistrate judge, because the issuing judge, the state court judge, authorized this, that therefore Investigator Scully could, in good faith, rely on that in executing the warrant. We disagree. If there was something there in the affidavit, anything at all, to suggest that this transaction was going to occur and that there was going to be a nexus to Elst's house, that would be one thing.
Well, that doesn't show a lack of neutrality of the magistrate judge, does it? It doesn't just show a bad decision?
No. This is an objective test. So the objective test is in the affidavit itself, the fact that there was no facts presented that a triggering event would occur shows that it was, quote, so lacking in probable cause as to render official belief in its existence of probable cause entirely unreasonable. And I think Leon makes it clear that this is an objective test. And we view that whether there were objectively ascertainable facts to believe that this was a reasonable that the existence of probable cause was reasonable.
So if the magistrate erroneously issues a warrant, then the magistrate judge is no longer neutral? Is that what you're arguing?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word neutral. I understand the use of that term. I'm arguing that he's basically abandoned his judicial role, and it's sort of tied up in the fact that it's so lacking in probable cause. I mean, there's no facts whatsoever.
There's certainly no indicia that this magistrate went out on the search or anything of that nature. That he worked out of the police station or something like that.
No. You're
strictly based on the what you say objectively was a bad decision.
Right. And what he did was he essentially allowed the officers. It seems like you were referring to the Logi decision, and it's similar to that, not in the sense like in that case the magistrate actually went out to the search, but that wasn't the case here. But what he did was similar in that he allowed the officers to basically fill in the blanks. As you remember, in that case, the officers actually did physically fill in the blanks. In this case, what we're saying is Scully, he gets the affidavit, and he essentially decides when he's going to execute this warrant. On the 16th, when he applied for it, there was nothing in progress. There was nothing set up. There was nothing that had been planned. The district court essentially just handed off his responsibility to this officer.
So the triggering event is what, when there's a scheduled meeting? What's the trigger?
There was no scheduled meeting.
The triggering event
in this case purported to be a prediction, essentially, that there was going to be a deal, a drug deal, at Mr. Elf's house.
And it had to be a fact, not a prediction.
I'm sorry?
It had to be a set fact that they knew that that's when they were going
right.
to meet.
Right, exactly. There was no fact set forth whatsoever that would even give you an inference that this would occur. Sure, there was a buy there on the 10th, but there was nothing to indicate there was anything going to happen there in the future. And that was all they had to go on. So it was all prediction. It was all sort of theoretical. There was nothing known. We didn't have where Scully has the CI call him on the 16th and say, hey, look, we're going to come over and we're going to do a deal. And they put that in the affidavit. Then the judge has something to go on.
From the officer's perspective, though, once that warrant is signed, which says if these things happen and those things actually happened, wouldn't that be objectively reasonable for him to feel that he had a warrant?
No. And here's why. Is because I think if you look at Malley versus Briggs, the standard for finding probable cause while applying for a warrant, okay, because what the government's trying to do is they're trying to say, hey, they applied for the warrant, therefore there's prima facie good faith. But the test is bigger than that. You still have to determine whether the affidavit is so plainly deficient that a reasonably trained officer would have known that his affidavit failed to establish probable cause and that he should not have applied for a warrant. Well, here, the settled law in Wisconsin was that, you know, here's what you have to do. You have to show facts that there's this contraband's on a sure course to the house. There has to be that nexus because they're trying to avoid having government create probable cause. Here, this is wholly created by Investigator Scully, completely. And on the 16th, that's why it says in the triggering mechanism in paragraph 7 of the affidavit, it says if this occurs. Because he doesn't know if it's going to occur. And the judge doesn't know if it's going to occur. And I don't know if I'm running out of time here, but... Okay, I will save the rest of mine.
Thanks. Ms. Jacobs. Some judges are a little stricter than others.
May it please the Court, good morning. Michelle Jacobs, Acting United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I represent the United States here this morning.
I have a forgive me, this is terrible to do to you, but I need to ask you this. When you stated in your brief that this was not a sure course case, what did you mean by that?
Well,
in other words, doesn't Dennis demand a showing that the drugs were on a sure course to the destination to be searched in order to demonstrate a sufficient nexus?
Well, what I meant by that is in most cases, including Dennis, other cases like Grubbs, Leidner, any of those cases, we're dealing with either a package that's been mailed, for example. In Dennis, it was a package that was mailed. They discover that there's drugs in it through a search warrant. They put the beeper in and send the package, again, on its way to the address that it was on a sure course for in the first instance. In Grubbs, it's the same kind of thing. It was a child porn case. There was a package. The person said, mail me this child porn at this address. The package is on its way. This is just a different kind of case. The sure course analysis, I think when you read all of the cases, whether it's Leidner, Judge Wood's concurring opinion in Leidner, any of these cases, sure course, I think, is in some ways sort of a shorthand way of encapsulating the requirement in all anticipatory search warrant cases that there be probable cause to believe that at the time the warrant is executed, that the contraband will be in the place that is going to be searched, and as opposing counsel was discussing with you earlier, making sure that the government has not manipulated the situation in such a way as, you know, we mail you a package, we do a search warrant at your house, that sort of thing. Neither of those concerns, I think, is problematic here. First of all, there's no question, I mean, the government has not tried to appeal Judge Griesbach's ruling that there was not probable cause set forth in the search warrant that the triggering event will occur. I mean, what happened was the officer did not ground his assertion that that was going to happen with enough facts to establish that that event will occur.
I'm a little curious about that because the confidential informant had this kind of this continuing relationship mm-hmm. with the source of the drugs, mm-hmm. Or the intermediary, I guess.
Right.
I'm curious you did not appeal that the magistrate might have inferred that this continuing relationship would predict a future transaction like the previous one.
Well, I think that's probably the case. But again, we did not take the appeal here, in part because I think that the Leon holding that Judge Griesbach relied on is very solid.
If you were going to go back and rewrite this warrant, I know it didn't come out of your office, but if you were, is there another fact you would have added in that would have given the magistrate probable cause?
I think there's nothing in the record that I can point to say the agent should have said this about what else he knew. But I think you're exactly right, and that is the longstanding relationship is set forth not only in the three controlled buys that they had done up until the 18th, but it also the search warrant also indicates that there had been a longer-standing relationship. I also think it's important to note, and could have been fleshed out a lot better in the search warrant, that, and it does say this in paragraph 3 of the warrant, that Madsen would typically have an ounce or less at his own home, but when the quantities got too large, it's clear then they were going to go to the source's house, to Elst's house. And if their relationship, and again, this is not in the record, but if their relationship was developing in such a way we're talking larger and larger quantities, then necessarily I think that could have been flushed out better, that they anticipated, you know, if they did a deal every...
But it's not in the record.
But it's not, again,
okay.
I completely concede that that's not in the record.
But
going back, Judge Rovner, to your question, not only, I think... Remember that this is a Leon case. I guess that's what I'll say. You know, there may have been facts that would have been better. Certainly, they should have put more facts in the warrant to establish this triggering event. But there is absolutely no indication of any kind of government manipulation here. I mean, opposing counsel says we've manufactured this entire transaction. That's not the case.
Okay. Let me just see if I can get this Are you conceding today that this was not a sure course case, and that that's the error in the warrant, but an error that falls within the Leon good faith exception?
What I'm not conceding that it's not a sure course case. I'm just saying that most of the cases that use the term sure course are cases of packages being mailed or couriers with drugs in the car who never made it to the location before they got arrested. In this case, but that sure course requirement is a way of saying we need to make sure that the contraband, that there's probable cause that the contraband will be at the location when that triggering event occurs.
Okay, what's another way of showing that the drugs were on a sure course to the destination that was going to be searched in order to demonstrate a sufficient nexus for probable cause?
If I understand your question correctly, what Judge Griesbach found, and I think he's exactly right, is that if this triggering event, there's not enough facts on the triggering event, but if that triggering event occurred, then what we know occurred is that a drug deal happened at Elst's house, or the drugs came out of, the person came out to deliver the drugs, or went back in right after delivering the drugs. If that happened, is there probable cause to believe that there's contraband? I mean, it's going to either be pre-recorded buy money, it's going to be drugs, it's going to be the accoutrements that come with drug cases. Is there probable cause to believe, if the triggering event occurs, that those items will be at Elst's residence? And the answer is clearly yes. I would submit that part of it is fairly straightforward.
So if the CI had showed up and found that Elst wanted to complete the transaction somewhere else, and the CI, knowing that the police want to search the house, subtly coaxes him into changing his mind and completing the transaction at his house, would that change anything? Would it constitute would that be impermissible government manipulation?
That may be, but that's not what happened here.
I know.
The informant says, Madsen tells me he's already at Elst's house, so that's where the drug deal's going to happen. There was no government manipulation of any kind here. And that's why I say, when I say this is not a sure course case, all I mean is that the typical sure course case, the courier, the mail package, they're just making sure that the government hasn't mailed you the drugs because we want to search your house. This is just a different kind of case. But that sure course requirement, I think, is a way to test, was there government manipulation, and is there probable cause to believe that the contraband will be there when the event occurs? And that's Judge Wood, in her concurrence in Leidner, talks a lot about that, and that is that sort of pre-existing nexus between the contraband and the triggering event. So
that's usually from independent, it would be postal or some delivery service or something outside their control.
It's right.
Just following a process that was already in.
Exactly.
And of course, that's the easy case. The hard case is, okay, what's a sure course among bad guys?
Exactly, and that is Leidner. I mean, that's when the, I think his name was Sapp, the guy who had the marijuana in his car, tells law enforcement, I was going to Leidner's house. Now, do you believe him or do you not believe him? Was it really on that sure course? He doesn't have the address on the mail package or something like that that would be a more independent fact to rely on.
What you conceded is that the search warrant wasn't adequate and that, therefore, you've got...
We have. And in the end, I guess what I really would ask the court to focus on is Leon and how limited Leon really is in instances, I think, like this, where there were not cases that would have instructed this circuit court judge or the investigator that this was so plainly deficient. I mean, he made a mistake. There should be more facts, and I think there could have been more facts that would have beefed up this triggering event language. But in the end, Leon is here to deter police misconduct, intentional, deliberate, reckless police misconduct. This is not the kind of case that would call for an exception to the application of Leon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you. First, I think it's worth noting, and we'll go back to U.S. versus Dennis, that we're not just talking about manipulation by government agents. We're talking about, I'm reading directly from the decision about the conditions precedent remark. I'm looking at page, not sure it's paragraph 13 of the decision, but as such, the court cautioned that a magistrate issuing an anticipatory warrant should protect against premature execution by listing the conditions governing the execution which are explicit, clear, and narrowly drawn so as to avoid misunderstanding or manipulation by government agents. I submit that the affidavit in this case is none of those, and it's not even close. And both the court that issued it and Investigator Scully, they are required as public officials to know the law. And the law says you need more than this. And both the magistrate judge and the district court in this case said you need more than this. What they did was they made the wrong call on Leon, though. And I think that Investigator Scully in particular, when he submitted this, he is a reasonably well-trained officer. He was all in the record, he was a 30-year veteran, I believe, of the police department. He'd been doing drug investigations for 10 years. He had been in over 300 drug investigations, 300 drug investigations. He is not just a rookie. He should know the law. He submitted this affidavit knowingly. He knew it was in it. And he had to know that it was just not up to par, because it's plain. It was plain to everybody else. It was plain to the magistrate judge. It was plain to the district court. And I submit that in that, because of that, this Leon does not apply, cannot stand. And I would ask the court to reverse the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bertzel. Now, Mr. Bertzel, you were court appointed, were you not?
Correct.
Well, you have the deep and grateful thanks of the court for taking on this case and for doing such a fine job for your client. Thank you, sir. And thank you as well, Ms. Jacobs.